Hi, this is Cynthia Davis. Can Barack Obama be impeached? How can the Constitution be fixed? In this edition of Homefront, Dr. Herb Titus shares with us some insights on what it means to be a natural-born citizen. Stay tuned as we ask probing questions and hear rock-solid answers from a constitutional scholar. Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. I'm glad to have all of you here with us today on Homefront. We have a very special guest, a Constitution and Common Law scholar, Dr. Herb Titus. Dr. Titus earned his J.D. degree cum laude from Harvard and a B.S. in political science from the University of Oregon, from which he graduated Phi Beta Kappa. He is a prolific writer and speaker, and if I went on to name all his books and accomplishments, we would rob ourselves of time to listen to the rest of his wisdom. So I want you to know I'm incredibly honored to introduce you to our guest. Welcome, Dr. Titus.
Well, thank you for having me as a guest, Cynthia.
It's going to be good. One question I would like to ask you off the bat at the beginning here is, you ran for vice president on the Constitution Party's ticket in 1996, and I have that in common with you. I ran for lieutenant governor in 2012 on the Constitution Party ticket, and I want to know, what was it like to run with Howard Phillips, and what did you learn from that?
Well, if you're going to run with Howard Phillips, you have to keep pace. The man was unbelievable in terms of his knowledge, his comprehension of the issues, his articulation of why we needed a third party in a different direction in which to lead the country. He was quite something.
Do you still feel that way, or do you feel like your political views have changed? I mean, you understand the Constitution like no other person in the country. We're watching a higher level of ignorance. We're watching our country become more stupid, if you'll forgive the word, but it's like we're throwing our understanding of how we got where we are today into the trash can. Now we've got a situation where fewer people than ever even understand the law or want to understand the law. So how do we make sense out of where we are today? Were you running during a golden era?
Oh, I don't think so. I think that the need for a third party is greater today in America than it was back in the 1990s, and it will, I think, continue to be the case. It's good to see the Tea Party. It obviously is not really a political party. It's more of a political movement, but it could very well change and become an alternative third party. I think the difficulty that we have today with both parties is that they've forgotten that God is sovereign. If you look at the Democratic Party, they think the government is sovereign, and the civil authorities are like gods to them. The Republicans, unfortunately, think that man is sovereign, and they're both wrong. God is sovereign, and this nation was based upon the sovereignty of God. It begins with the first sentence of the Declaration of Independence, which is the nation's charter, and it's an appeal to the laws of nature and of nature's God, and at the conclusion of the Declaration, it appeals to the supreme judge of the world and to his divine providence. So it was a recognition that God sat on the throne, and it was man's duty to conform his government to those principles that God has given to mankind.
So you went to Harvard, and I'm very familiar with Harvard because I grew up in Boston, and Harvard has a lot of respect. The graduates who come from Harvard are world class. However, most of them are world-class in secular values. Harvard has become a very godless university. So when you got out of Harvard and you were fully educated, what made you decide to study constitutional law?
Well, I'd always been interested in constitutional law. I had no idea what it was until I took a course at the University of Oregon from a wonderful and delightful teacher of constitutional law that got me interested, and then I went on to Harvard, and of course there isn't really any specialization in law school until you get through the first degree, and so I took a regular courses at Harvard. It wasn't until I was teaching law, first at the University of Oklahoma and then at the University of Oregon, that I drifted into basically teaching constitutional law. And so it wasn't out of the practice of law that led me to the Constitution, but it was more of an academic interest at the time.
And back then, constitutional law meant you studied the Constitution. Today, it's devolved into constitutional law is studying the history of the U.S. Supreme Court cases.
Well, even then, Cynthia, I must tell you, I never read the Constitution from front to back until after I became a Christian in 1975 and after I'd been teaching constitutional law for many years. And indeed, when I was a student at Harvard and also when I was a student at the University of Oregon, we never bothered to read the Constitution. We always wanted to find out what men said within the Constitution, and those men were the justices of the United States Supreme Court. So it wasn't until after my conversion that I really began to realize that, hey, the law is not what men say it is. The law is what God reveals it to be. And I began to then read the Constitution with an entirely different set of lenses, an entirely different worldview, and was amazed what I found out.
I spent 8 years in the Missouri State Legislature, and while I was in office, I was there from 2003 to 2011. Obviously, Barack Obama got elected in 2008. I got a letter from a constituent. She wrote me and said, Barack Obama is disqualified for running for president of the United States because he's not a natural-born citizen. And then she went on to tell me that they're filing a lawsuit to require a judge to produce his official birth certificate. And she asked me if I would like to file, if I would like to sign on to the lawsuit as a plaintiff. Well, at the time, I really had no interest in that topic. So it didn't jolt me or shock me just getting a letter. I get a lot of letters from a lot of constituents on a lot of different topics, and I can't take on every issue. I was walking into a committee meeting, and one of my colleagues in the House was talking to me about a letter he got, and he agreed to sign on to the lawsuit, and he said it turned out to be a really good deal because he's had a lot of positive letters since then from constituents thanking him for signing on. So I thought, wow, I really would love to get a lot of positive letters from my constituents. Maybe I should sign on. So with the encouragement of Tim Jones, who went on to become the Speaker of the House of the state of Missouri, I went ahead and signed on to the lawsuit. Well, after I signed on, then Tim Jones got a lot of negative email from people calling him a birther, and he seemed to back away from the issue. But I got more engaged every year. In fact, part of what got me into this was when I was studying the birth certificates in Missouri and how they're issued, and so I had state knowledge. It went so far as me actually flying out to California to be a witness in the Orley Tate's case. It's still going on, but what occurred to me during the process is a lot of people are judging the question on if he's qualified based on if he's a citizen or not. They don't seem to understand the question is not, do you think Barack Obama is a citizen? Is he, the real question is he a natural-born citizen? And that is something without any education we can't expect people to understand. So can you explain the definition of a natural-born citizen as it applies to being qualified for the President of the United States?
Surely. But let's first look to see why it is that the United States Constitution requires the President of the United States to be a natural-born citizen. That's not a requirement of any member of the Senate. It's not a requirement of any member of the House. and it's not a requirement for any member of the federal judiciary, even the United States Supreme Court. So the only person that is required to be a natural-born citizen is the President of the United States. And so the question is why single out the President and require him to be a natural-born citizen when it doesn't require any other officer in the federal government to be a natural-born citizen? And the reason is clear, and that's that the President is the chief constitutional officer of the nation. He is the only one whose oath of office is actually written in the Constitution itself, in Article 2. And he is required by the Constitution to swear an oath or affirm that he will protect and defend defend, protect, and preserve the Constitution of the United States. So the United States Supreme Court isn't the chief constitutional officer. The President is. The Congress doesn't have the chief officer of the United States. The President is. So you have to ask yourself the question, well, if he's the chief constitutional officer, if he's the one that people look to preserve, to protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, what is it that you're looking for in terms of a natural-born citizen? Well, what you're looking for is someone who has no divided loyalty, has a single loyalty to the nation because of the concern that if he was born in another country or if he was born to a mother and a father who are not citizens, then you would have who's responsible for defending, protecting, and preserving the Constitution to have perhaps a divided loyalty between the States of America and another country. So, what is a natural-born citizen? It's one who is born to an American father and mother. Doesn't matter where he's born, they might be overseas when he's born, but is born to an American father and American mother. Now, how do we know this? Well, you go back to the Bible, and you find that in Deuteronomy chapter 17, when Moses forecast that the people of Israel would at one time rebel against God and ask for a king, Moses gives this directive that you shall not ask for a king other than from your brothers. From whom? From the natural-born citizens of Israel. Why? Because he is given so much responsibility, you want to have singular loyalty to the country in that one person.
A lot of people are suggesting that Ted Cruz may be interested in running for president and suggesting that he may not be qualified for the same reasons that his father was not an American citizen at the time he was born. Is it at the time you're born, even though, or could you become a citizen later?
No, I think it's the time of birth, and Senator Cruz is a good example, and I think Senator Rubio is also a good example, both of whom have Cuban ancestry. You know, it's amazing, Cynthia, that in America today, the people who appreciate America more than anyone else are the people who have come from countries that are totalitarian in nature and where there was no liberty. So people from Cuba, people from behind the Iron Curtain, these people really appreciate the constitutional liberties that are embodied in the Constitution of the United States. The irony today is you could have someone who's a natural-born citizen that is born to a father and a mother, both of whom are citizens of the United States, and actually be negative towards the country. It tells you something about how far our culture has fallen away from the biblical principles upon which it was founded. And this is the great danger today. People don't understand why a natural-born citizen is a requirement because they don't see that spirit of patriotism and commitment to the nation that arises out of birth. And that's because, of course, in our educational system and in the media, we pummel ourselves. We beat on each other for not being perfect.
Both Ted Cruz and Barack Obama clearly had one parent who was an American citizen and the other parent, who clearly was not an American citizen, was a citizen of another country. So that would give them what's called dual citizenship. Can you explain how dual citizenship works, and if one has dual citizenship, does that automatically disqualify that person from being a natural-born citizen?
Well, I think it does. If the word dual tells you something. If you have dual citizenship, that means you've got loyalty to two different nations. Now, as long as those nations are getting along and are equally committed to one another, there's not going to be much difference between a dual citizen and someone who's not. But the Constitution was really designed to deal with principles that are timeless. And that's what a constitution is enduring principles. They don't change with changing times. And too often what happens to us is that we make decisions based upon the immediacy of events. We make decisions based upon what we think is practical rather than what is principled. And I think that's what's happened to the country today, is that they have forgotten that the Constitution lays down principles that are specifically designed to endure. They don't change with changing time.
The blame goes to the Democrat Party for not qualifying their candidate before they put him on the ballot. But once they did decide they were going to ignore the Constitution and put up somebody anyway, then it became the duty of the Republican Party to oppose this candidate based on the fact that he's disqualified. And the Republican Party remained silent and did not oppose the candidacy of Barack Obama.
Well, as we were talking before, neither the Democratic Party nor the Republican Party is a constitutional party. That's the reason why, for example, you ran on the Constitutional Party ticket, is because it takes a stand in favor of what a constitution really is and why we have a constitution, especially why we have a written constitution. Chief Justice Marshall, in the seminal case of Marbury and Madison, said that the reason why you have a written constitution is for the people won't forget, and for the government officials won't forget, the foundation principles upon which the nation is made. Now, if someone wants to be president of the United States but isn't a natural-born citizen, or if some people want to get someone like Senator Cruz to be president of the United States, then all they have to do is amend the Constitution. But today, people don't want to take the hard road. They want to take the easy road. The courts, for example, are amending the Constitution constantly because they're substituting their own judgment for that which is embodied in the written document as ratified by the people. So it's a constitutional crisis in which we live, and the question of natural-born citizenship is only one of the crises that we face.
On top of all that, the family is breaking apart. Yeah, you're getting into a crisis we all face. Well, a lot of people, without having any education or training on what the definition of natural-born citizen is, they're imagining just because his mother was an American, that means that he was an American citizen. Why do you need a dad? There are so many kids today who are born without dads. Our society is now pretty much emasculated the men and calculated that they don't have a purpose in our culture anymore. You can give birth to children without a dad. Your citizenship is the only thing that matters. So when people hear that Barack Obama's father was not a U.S. citizen, they can shake that off, because what is a dad anyway? Now, the fact that the two parents were married at the time of the birth should make a difference. Can you explain how having a parent from a foreign country would nullify your status as a natural-born citizen?
Well, a natural-born citizen is, by definition, a person who, at the point of birth, has a father that is an American and a mother that is American. That's the very nature of natural-born citizen. Again, it goes back to Deuteronomy chapter 17, when God says, you shall take only someone from your brethren. That means, as we know, on the basis of the family structure that prevailed in Israel, that that means that the person has to be born to both a mother and a father who are Israeli. Now, we can second guess God if we want to. We can point out examples of people who are born to the same citizen parents, turns out not to be a loyal or patriotic person, and we can point to people who, as I was saying a while ago, were born in totalitarian countries and appreciate this nation more than we do. But it's not for man to change the rules. The scripture is very firm about that, is that you don't change the rules. Now, there is a rule that allows a change, and that's the modification process through Amendment 5, or of Article 5 of the Constitution. But that's the means by which the term is to be changed. And, of course, it's much more difficult to get a constitutional amendment than to get a statute through Congress and signed by the president. And what happens with men and women is we're impatient, we think we know better than God, and so we're going to do it our way. Well, that's the way of destruction. That's precisely the teaching of the Old and the New Testament, is if you don't obey what God has said, if you add to it or subtract from it, you're inviting destruction.
Hi friends, do you like what you're hearing? Then go to my website. It's CynthiaDavis.net, and sign up for my newsletter. You'll get all this information and more when you sign up for my email reminding you of when you'll hear another podcast and letting you know what's coming up next. Besides, we always have a little bit of humor at the end, so go to CynthiaDavis.net and stay in the loop. For those of you who don't like email, go to my Facebook page. It's called Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And make sure you click the like button. That way, you'll have a convenient way to see what we're doing and to get the word when another podcast is released. Let it shine before all men. That's Homefront with Cynthia Davis on Facebook. My website is CynthiaDavis.net. That's where we keep all our good stuff. So if you want to get our newsletter and find more podcasts, go to CynthiaDavis.net. Hey, let's stay in touch. So now that we have a man in the White House who may not be qualified, there are people talking about impeachment. The concern I have about that myself is, first of all, we have impeached presidents before in my lifetime. I remember Richard Nixon. He went out in disgrace. But then we had Bill Clinton. He went out with more glory than ever. In fact, during that time, the internet was relatively new in my household. It was the first time my 18-year-old son read the entire transcript of the court case. And I was horrified. I mean, every detail. He wanted me to know about the blue dress that didn't go to the dry cleaner and all the other shameful acts that occurred in the White House. But yet, if Bill Clinton had been able to run for a third term, he probably would have won. The question is, does impeachment really accomplish anything? Is it politically possible for this president to be impeached, or is it constitutionally possible?
Well, I think it's politically impossible because you have a Democratic Senate and a Republican House. You're not likely to get, you may be able to get articles of impeachment which come from the House, but in a trial before the United States Senate, you're not likely to get any meaningful, significant trial with Harry Reid in charge. It was even the case with regard to the Congress back when Clinton was charged. It was a Republican Senate and the House, and while the House brought the articles of impeachment, the Senate did not even seriously consider them. But I think that the problem that we have is not so much with the impeachment process. It's a perfectly legitimate and a perfectly well-structured system. The problem we have is we have a problem of of not really believing in the Constitution. I mean, here's a man in the White House who violates the Constitution without any qualms whatsoever, and the Congress is unwilling really to say, hey, you can't do that, that's unconstitutional. We can't allow that to happen over and over and over again. What you find is you find a weak Congress, weak opposition from the Republican Party, and so Obama can get away with it.
Not only can he get away with it, but we've seen that there's no limit even put on him by Congress. It's not too uncommon for you to read an email that's going around, or people post articles on Facebook about how many millions of dollars have been spent on the Obamas vacationing. It almost seems like he got elected so they could go on vacations. And, of course, some people think that'd be a good idea for him to go on more vacations. But nevertheless, I cannot share their outrage at all the money being spent on his vacations, because having been in the legislative branch of government, I understand that we, the legislators, control the purse strings. I do not understand why Congress would not give him a budgetary line item and say, look, buddy, this is all you get for vacations and no more. Maybe we give you $25,000 a year, and once you've exceeded that ceiling, you pay for the rest out of your own pocket.
Well, there are not very many people in Congress who would voice that view, much less have any guts to actually act on that view. But you would think that Congress would be outraged by the incredible expenditures that this president in running around the country. I mean, he doesn't govern. He runs around campaigning. He's on a perpetual campaign, and at our expense. So you would think the Congress and the House could do this. It doesn't need to have the President or the Senate to go along with it. The House just simply says, no, we will not fund the government at this level without these restrictions. But what's the problem? The problem is that the Republicans don't want to lay down the standard, because they might want to do the same thing. And so they don't want to lay down this standard that applies to the Democrats, because, oh, it could be applied against us, so we better not take that position here.
I had an expense account when I was in office, and I understood that that's the limit. Every office holder that I know of has an expense account. So our anger really needs to be toward the Congress, because they do control the purse strings. So now we've got people asking, how do we change the Constitution if the Congress has gone awry? Can the states wrestle it back? There's been a lot of talk about having an Article 5 convention. What is your take on that?
Well, I don't think you're going to get anything different than what we have from a constitutional convention. You have to look and see, you know, who dominates constitutional conventions. Well, just ordinary people, but obviously in our age, people with money, people with power, people who have the wherewithal and the interest in reconstituting the government. And frankly, a constitutional convention doesn't make much sense to me, because the Constitution doesn't need to be changing. What needs to be changed are the people under it. And this has always bothered me about the amendment process. People saying, well, we need to amend the Constitution in order to protect innocent life in the womb of a mother. Well, no, we don't have to do that. It's not the Constitution that needs amending. It's the courts that need amending. And this is the problem, I think, with the Constitutional Convention, is that the presupposition is there's something wrong with the Constitution. No, there's something wrong with the way that we are behaving under this Constitution. The Constitution doesn't need to be changed. And if you're going to have a Constitutional Convention, watch out, because there's no law that governs the Constitutional Convention. That is an enterprise in which the people are basically given free rein. That's what happened to the Constitutional Convention in 1787, was that they were gathered together to amend the Articles of Confederation, and they came back with an entirely new Constitution in the name of the people. Well, that's the way that the whole set of rules are with regard to constituting a civil government. Remember in 1 Samuel 8, the people were complaining to Samuel about the corruption of his sons as judges, and they said, we want a king like all the other nations. And God didn't stop them. He warned them, but he didn't stop them. Why? Because the people have the original right to constitute and reconstitute the government. That's what's in the Declaration of Independence. So if you're going to have a constitutional convention, you better know your people.
Well, the people in favor of the constitutional convention are selling the idea on their proposals of what could happen. So they're throwing out ideas like, let's limit Congress. Congress has gotten out of control. If we pass some laws that say no bureaucratic entity is allowed to pass laws, all laws must be passed through Congress, what that would do is tell the EPA that they can't have laws that are not approved of by Congress. They can propose laws to Congress, but it doesn't become a law until Congress says it's a law. We have a lot of very large bureaucratic entities, all the departments of education. I don't have a list in front of me, but you think of all the bureaucracies that our Congress has created, and then you think about all the laws that those bureaucracies have created by unelected people who are nameless and faceless. And another idea they came up with is, let's have each state pick a U.S. Supreme Court justice. Then instead of having a Supreme Court of 9, we would have a Supreme Court of 50, and that would allow the philosophy and the jurisprudence of the entire country to be reflected, not just who are the cronies of the current president at the time. Another idea they came up with was, what if we put a spending cap on Congress, since they're incapable of capping their own spending? They've been going about this like drunken sailors for decades now. They've demonstrated that they don't know how to stop drinking. Somebody's got to take the bottle away from them. So these are ideas that I support, but at the same time, what you're saying is that Congress is incapable of getting their own house in order. In fact, you made a famous quote here. You said, Congress doesn't have clean hands. Without having their own house in order, how do they impeach the president for not having his house in order? And then you go on to say, if American people really wanted constitutional government, if they were really committed to the kind of constitutional republic that is reflected in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of the United States, things would change. I believe the prognosis is grim until this country decides we want to go back to the Constitution.
Well, and I think the only way that we're going to come as a people to that point is if God will continue to judge the nation. And God is judging the nation through the storms and weather and through a revelation of our weaknesses in our finances and so forth. I mean, if you read the book of Deuteronomy, what is happening to America today is the same thing that happened to the nation of Israel when they disregarded the laws of God and the covenant that they had that governed their civil affairs. So all we're doing is repeating history, and the problem is that people just don't care. Well, the only way I think that people are going to care is if all the goodies are stripped away from them, if we no longer have the comforts that we have as a nation. That's the only way I think that people are finally going to say, hey, wait a minute. Maybe the answer to all of our problems is not in ourselves. It's going back to God's law, going back to the covenant which our forefathers signed and under which we were supposed to live, and honor the law of God, honor the law of the Constitution, because that's the only answer that we have against, for example, the international war on terrorism. We're not going to get anywhere with all the terrorists if we're going to turn our backs on God, who's the only one who can protect this land from the enemy.
Yes, but the symptoms look grim. If you look at just the statistics, that church attendance is down to record lows, we have a proliferation of homosexuality, which is our culture shaking our fist right in the face of God. We've got laws that are supporting decadent behavior. We've got families breaking up at record paces, or worse than that, we've got families that are not even forming in the first place by people trying to get married in, at the beginning. The divorce rate's bad, but what's even worse is the non-divorce rate of people who are producing babies and not marrying at all. There's no divorce to record there. So with the grim statistics we're looking at, do you have hope that things are going to turn around, and what is your hope?
Well, my only hope is in God and in God's mercy and His grace. I don't have any confidence that the people are going to change their way that they are living. I think the only way that they change is when they come up against the wall of God's law, and they realize that, oh, if I continue to behave this way, it's going to just come back on my head. This is no way to live. It's only the way of death. But I don't know that you can really get that across to people. We live in a fallen world. We live in a world in which man is men and women turn their backs on God. They think they know better how they should live than He does. And unless people respond because God shows forth His judgment and at the same time tempers His judgment with mercy, that we're ever going to survive as a nation, much less thrive as we once did in the early part of our history. We've always had difficulty through every historical period, but the one in which we live is one where people are deliberately choosing to turn their backs on God. So how can we expect the blessings of God if we don't honor Him?
Right. So what is your favorite book of the Bible? You mentioned Deuteronomy a couple times. Do you have one that is your favorite?
Well, I've got several, but one that I usually cite is Titus 3:5. It's not by works of righteousness that we have done, but by His mercies He has saved us through the washing and regeneration of the Holy Spirit.
I like that, and we'll always be able to remember it because of your name, Dr. Titus. Does Titus mean something in your family's lineage?
Well, I don't know. My family's lineage is sort of lost in history, and as you well know, the New Testament teaches to not waste your time on genealogy, so I leave that one to God.
There are not a lot of people named Dr. Titus, I'll give you that.
No, there are not very many. That is correct.
So what message do you have to give our listeners today? If you were going to leave us with one gem, speak to America. Go ahead.
Oh, I think we should contend for the faith earnestly, just like it says in the book of Jude. We have a duty to contend for the faith. We do not give up. In 1 Timothy or 2 Timothy chapter 1, it also says, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of love and power and a sound mind. And the final one I would say is in Hebrews chapter 11, where it says that God is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. I think this is what is so necessary in America today. And God calls us into different positions. Some are called into business. Some people are called into politics. Some people into law. Some in medicine. Some in digging ditches and building houses and doing all of those tasks that are so demeaned in our society. All of these are callings of God. We are His workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for works that He prepared beforehand, that we walk in them. That's the solution to America.
And I will say the way to measure our success is not by the results. It's by how faithful we are. We stand as a conscience for this country. Every day when we speak the truth, we're helping shape how other people feel. The one thing that stood out to me in this birth certificate issue was all the vitriolic rhetoric, the meanness, the ugliness, the disdain, the nasty letters I got from people saying, you know, name calling. I don't call people names, but there were people who quickly came up with this word birther and tried to turn it into a disparaging term. Since when does being intellectual and trying to be constitutional and cognitive about an issue turn you into a bad person just because you asked questions? I think that that's a sign that there are people who don't want truth to come out, that their only tactic left is meanness and how to mock people for raising questions. Yet at the same time, you stand as a great testimony to how people can speak the truth and be very intelligent and be very respected. So I want to thank you for coming on our show today, and I want to thank you for being brave and honorable and standing up for what's right. And it just is a blessing having you on. Thank you so much.
Well, Cynthia, nice to be with you, and thank you for inviting me.
Will you come on again sometime?
I'm sure, Lord willing, we should be able to find the time to do that.
Okay, thanks so much.
Bye.
Goodbye. This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.